So tonight, I'm going to talk about the idea of the spiritual journey. And I'm going to talk about this because yesterday was the Christian feast of Epiphany. And so, as you may know, there are 12 days of Christmas, and after the 12th day of Christmas is the Feast of the Epiphany. And the Epiphany really, it represents a few things, but in the Western Church in particular, it really represents the coming of the three wise men to the baby in Bethlehem. And so, to remind you of this very traditional story, according to the Bible, baby Jesus was born in Bethlehem. You know, some shepherds came. And then, kind of out of the blue, these three wise men, they're also described as three kings from somewhere east, some vague place of the east, they come and they say they've been following a star, and the star led them to Bethlehem. And they bring him three very particular gifts: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, gold from ancient times has been associated with royalty, with kingship. And so it represents, in the Christian scheme, it represents the fact that Christ is a king of sorts. Frankincense from ancient times has been associated with divinity, especially with the kind of purification that you would need to be in the divine presence. In the old world, frankincense was used much in the same way that sage is used in the new world, as a kind of cleansing herb. And that represents the divinity of Christ. And myrrh is a spice they would use when they embalm the dead. And so it's associated with burial and death. And so in many ways it's seen as prefiguring the death that Jesus would die. So that's the very Christian story. What we do know, interestingly, is that there was a triple conjunction of planets in the constellation of Pisces around the year 4 BC. And so some people think that people certainly attach great astrological significance to this when it happened in the ancient world. And some people think that the interest in that might have morphed into a story about a star of Bethlehem. There was, in fact, a lot of in the ancient world, a lot of astrological interest in the development of early Christianity. And that might have been in some ways concretized in this particular story about these three wise men. So I'm not, in this Dharma talk, I'm not so much concerned with the historical truth, whether there was truth or, not truth of the story. But I'm very interested in the story, you might say, as a myth or as an archetype. What does it say about our spiritual journey? And the first thing that's kind of clear is that it was a hard journey. We're told, we don't get many details about these guys, but we're told they're kings, kings, pretty much in any culture, have it pretty good, And so they were starting out from a place where they were pretty comfortable, pretty good, and then taking this really hard journey. And we do know this about the ancient world, that basically getting from point A to point B in the ancient world was really a hard thing to do. We take it for granted now. We have automobiles and cars and things like that, planes. And so it's a journey that implies an incredible amount of effort. Now, the odd thing about the journey that we have to take is that in so many ways, it's a journey to where we already are. Think about the Buddhist idea of enlightenment. If I'm enlightened, I'm always in the present moment. Well, the present moment is where my body always is, And, the joke of human existence in some ways is that we're never here, We're always somewhere else other than here. Insofar as we meditate, we're kind of like tourists of the present moment. You know, we occasionally drop into the present moment. And so our journey, in so many ways, is to where we already are. In many ways, it's a kind of deep arriving in ourself, a deep arriving in the life we are meant to live, a deep arriving in our greater selves. So I'm going to share at this point a poem called The Journey. This is a poem by David White. And later I'll pass out this poem, but now I'll just read it. Above the mountains, the geese turn into the light again, painting their black silhouettes on an open sky. Sometimes everything has to be inscribed across the heavens so you can find the one line already inside you. Sometimes it takes a great sky to find that first bright and indescribable wedge of freedom in your own heart. Sometimes, with the bones of the black sticks left when the fire has gone out, someone has written something new in the ashes of your life. You are not leaving, even as the light fades quickly. You are arriving. And so I really think that this kind of deep arriving is, in many ways, the most powerful way to understand our journey. And I do want to say that this is not to discount the importance of sometimes going on external quests and going on external, you know, it's often by encountering the world that I encounter myself. And sometimes I have to have the breakthrough of some threshold in the external world before I can have it within myself, you know. And so that's also important. But ultimately, the journey is toward who I really am. Now, the next element of the story that's interesting, of course, is the star. The thing that provides direction, that provides inspiration. What is the star in your life? Think about that question for a minute. What provides inspiration in your life? You know, and it may be something that comes to mind very quickly. It may be, you may draw a blank and we'll have to think about it for a while. Part of the value of meditation is that when we can quiet our mind, the quiet mind is very spacious and it becomes very creative and it's full of possibilities. And the Buddhist word, the word that the Buddhists use is insight. That when we can quiet our mind, then insight happens. And so sometimes we have to get very quiet within ourselves before we can find that inspiration. Another thing I'll just share just about the word inspiration. We have a muscle in our body called the diaphragm. It's this rounded muscle, and when we contract it, we suck air in. And so this action of contracting the diaphragm, the medical term for the action of the diaphragm, is inspiration. And so it's worth at least experimenting when you need inspiration. How does it feel just to take some deep breaths, you know? The elements of the story that fascinate me the most archetypally are the three gifts. And first of all, just this idea that we find the sacred by bringing our gifts into the world. And the nature of the gifts is very interesting. So gold, well, that's very much associated with worldly wealth, worldly power. In my mind, that's very much associated with our talents. You know, some of us actually get money for, you know, doing our talents at our job, that sort of thing. What are your talents? Are you recognized in your life for your talents? What would it mean to be recognized for your talents if you're not recognized? You know, just how do those questions feel? And more than talents, gold also represents power. You know, are you in your power? What is your relationship to your power? You know, what would it mean for you to show up powerfully in the world? Now, by contrast, frankincense, again, that represents a kind of purification, more, you know, something more associated with sort of emptying and surrender. And myrrh, with its association with death, is really about ways that we, you could say, you know, sacrifice of ego, sacrifice of self. And there's this paradox, because the importance of surrender and sacrifice, that's one path to the sacred, and that's an important piece of the path. But also claiming one's power and stepping into one's power is an important piece. And they seem like contradictions, you know. Niels Bohr once said that the opposite of an ordinary true statement is a false statement, but the opposite of a profound truth may well be another profound truth. And this is kind of one of those cases. Certainly traditional religions and certainly traditional Christianity has very much emphasized the humility, the surrender, the self-sacrifice, you know, that side of it has played that side up and has played down the stepping into your own power side of it. And, you know, we could have all kinds of conversations about social control or whatever. But both are important. What this world needs more than anything are people who are deeply in touch with their heart, stepping into their power. That's what the world really needs. You know, and it's so important for me to do everything that I can do to make myself better, to make the world better. And it's also true that my powers are limited, that there's always going to be things that I can't do, and there are going to be things that happen to me that I have no say over, no control over. And so surrender is also important. You know? And so what is your relationship to these two sides of the approach to the sacred? How do you feel about being in your power? What would that mean? How would that look for you to show up in the world in your power? You know, how does that make you feel? And how do you feel about surrender? How do you feel about letting go? What do those words bring up in you? And so it's interesting to that all these things in this particular story, they're framed as gifts. If I show up in my power, connected to my heart, that's a gift I'm making to the world. If I'm able to surrender, truly surrender and let go, that's a gift I'm making to the world. Insofar as I can die to my self-importance or, you know, that sort of thing, that kind of self-sacrifice, that's a gift I give to the world. It may even be that my physical death is a kind of offering to the world, you know? We don't know. So at this point, I'll pass out the quote sheet. I always have a quote sheet. So I have the David White poem on this, which I won't read again. From the fourth Zen patriarch, Sansen, he says quite simply, the great way, the great Tao, is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When like and dislike are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. This is actually the beginning of a long piece called Verses on the Faith Mind. And if you're not familiar with it, it's a beautiful poem. This is just the first line of that poem. Rumi tells us, search no matter what situation you are in. O thirsty one, search for water constantly. Finally, the time will come when you reach the spring. And again, ultimately, that spring is within us. A man whose life overlapped with Rumi, Mr. Meister Eckhart, you will have peace to the extent that you have God, and the further away you are from God, the less you will be at peace. Thus, you may measure your progress with God by measuring your peace or lack of it. Alexander Posey simply says, beauty is light set free. Very simple. Pierre Vilayat Khan says, like the mother of the world who carries the pain of the world in her heart, you are sharing in a certain measure of cosmic pain and are called upon to meet it in joy instead of self-pity. The Christian writer Henry Nouwen, I have an increasing sense that the most important crisis of our time is spiritual, and that we need places where people can grow stronger in spirit and be able to integrate the emotional struggles in their spiritual journeys. And that is so true. Peter Jenkins, I don't know much about him, he said, still, as much as I had experienced, there was more waiting to be found. I had started out with a feeling of burning dullness and desperation. Now I was filled with a thrill and expectation of new discovery. This whole idea of the way that the journey transforms us. Marianne Williamson says, the spiritual path is simply the journey of living our lives. Everyone is on a spiritual path. Most people just don't know it. You know, and I've heard it said many times, you know, you want to know what the path is? Look at the challenges in your everyday life, the difficult people you know, the ordinary everyday challenges you have. That's the path right there, you know. The writer Mark Epstein says, in making a path like the Buddha, we discover our own capacities for relationship. Doing this is like feeling our way in the dark. We need a healthy appreciation for what kind of obstacles we are facing within ourselves, and we need a method for working our way around those obstacles. It is in this sense that the path is the goal. Opening leads to further opening. The Buddha's meditative teachings are about finding and incorporating a method around our obstacles. And I've even heard it said from a Buddhist perspective, obstacles are the path. R.A. Salvatore says, this is my spiritual journey through life, my way of making sense of the world. I don't need permission from anyone or accolades from anyone. It is completely internal. And Joseph Campbell talked about this when he talked about following your bliss. And the sense is that when I'm really locked into following my bliss, doesn't matter what anyone else says. Doesn't matter whether anyone else approves or doesn't approve. Like, that is my path, you know? Deborah Moffat says, Living a spiritual life may not be easy. It demands total authenticity. It brings you to dance to a unique song that only you can hear fully, and sometimes you dance alone because no others can hear the music. Mehmet Murat İlhan says, "For a spiritual journey, you don't have to meditate or visit a temple or listen to a guru. Just live a misty morning while the sun is rising." And I love that. The Zen people were all about this. You don't have to go someplace special. Just ordinary reality. You know, chop wood, carry water. Ordinary reality, that's where you find the mystery. Billy Corgan says, "I think a spiritual journey is not so much a journey of discovery, it's a journey of recovery. It's a journey of uncovering your inner nature. It's already there." I love this one from, I don't remember how to say his name, Efrat Bulkowitz, I don't know. "In this life, one does not come to dodge bullets." Athalia Luna says, "Your soul is your ultimate guidance system. You can think of your soul as the compass, map, and destination all in one." Ellen Browning says, "Who are we without our addictions, with our media-induced hungers? So often the voices we hear echoing in our mind are not our own, but those of our influencers. Isolation, while arguably going against human nature, is essential for mental and emotional health. Solitude is a detoxication of all that distorts our personality and misguides our path in life. It allows us to filter out foreign opinions and to hear our own voice, reach our authentic character, and practice fidelity to self." And T. Scott McLeod says, quite simply, "You will bring yourself the suffering you need to bring yourself, you will need to bring yourself so that you may awaken."